The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Okay. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Yeah. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Oh, once she grabs, she won't let go.
Dang it, Chris.
Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole.
Oh, yeah.
Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. None of that soft stuff. Rock, rock. None of that heavy metal stuff.
Rock, oh, no.
Rock, just a little bit of jazz. Rock, rock,
a little bit.
Rock and Nicole.
What do you think?
Just
I like love
that.
It. That was great. Thank you.
It's a Friday.
Somebody's laughing.
Starting the show musically. Thank you, Chris Isaac. Always appreciate it. It is a Friday. It is a busy day. We got a lot going on. We've got two guests, count them two, because it's a Friday and so much happening. But before I get to either one of them, Alex, I'm sorry. I need you to stand by for just a moment. I got to tell you what happened. So those of you who listen regularly know that for the last few days, I have been trolled that some idiot guy who, well, I do know now that he is from Texas, has been trolling the program. So he's been calling, trying to, you know, to talk about Fauci and stuff. You know, he's a Fox nut. His brain has been smashed by the right-wing crazies. So anyway, because I wouldn't play along with him, he kept calling and calling and calling, right? You guys have heard it for the last few days. I found him. Oh, I found him. I have his name. I have his phone number. I have his place of work. So let me just put out a warning. Patrick, that's his name. And you know what? I closed everything out and I don't recall his last name. But, you know, I can easily find it. And the police have it. And his boss knows. So fuck with me and I'll fuck right back with you. Bring it on, bitches. You know, you Trumpers think that this is what we do. This is not what we do. This is what you do. So go have at it by yourself. And good luck with your job as a realtor at Keller Williams. Yeah. All right. So now that that's out of the way.
Leary.
Oh, Paul. It's not Paul Leary. No, Patrick Leary. Patrick Leary? Okay. In San Antonio, Texas. So if anyone knows him, hey, Patrick. You know, when he tried calling today and I answered the phone, he's like, oh, Nicole, so what are we talking about on the show today? And I said, well, Patrick, we can talk about where you live, San Antonio, Texas, and your phone number. And I gave it to him and where you work. And gee, I haven't heard from him again. Isn't that interesting? Amazing. That's right. Never fuck with a Scorpio. Okay. Now that we did that. it looks like YouTube is buffering for some reason. Damn it. See, this is what happens. Anyway, let's get on with it because I told you we have a busy, busy show. So the other day, I noticed friend of the program, old friend, Alex Lawson, who's the executive director of Social Security Works, tweeted out that he was part of this live stream at Bernie Sanders, on Bernie Sanders' live stream, along with not only Bernie, but AOC and Reverend Dr. William Barber and, oh, who else? Mary Kay Henry from SEIU. I mean, it was like a who's who of like impressive, really impressive people. And you can tell I'm not easily impressed. And I tweeted out and Alex got back to me with something like, oh, I think they sent the email to the wrong place, but I'm not going to tell anyone. No, they didn't, Alex. First of all, you deserve that company because you do great work too. So congratulations on that. How did it go?
Oh, it was an honor to be there. Like so many great people on there. And the one that also the other person was Varshini, who runs Sunrise.
Oh, right. Sunrise Movement, and, which is the climate change kids.
And it was a really powerful program, I felt. Reverend Barber is a hero of mine.
He's amazing.
Bringing the moral clarity to it, being able to speak about this from a lens of justice, that's what we're fighting for. I got to talk about taking on pharma, and that's one of my favorite things. So I had fun with it. I definitely started the interview on mute, though. And Bernie Sanders
oh,
had to
no.
go, Alex,
oh,
you're
no.
on mute.
That's like the everybody's nightmare. You're going to be like on Twitch on a big thing like that, and you're talking and nothing's coming out. It's like, mute, your mute is on.
Luckily, we've been doing this for so long in the pandemic that I have a canned quip that I always use when I inevitably leave myself on mute, which is that's the tagline of the year. You're on mute.
Yeah.
And everybody appreciates it. So I thought it was powerful. You know, what we're talking about is we're in a very it's exhausting point because it's like everything's happening, but also nothing's happening. Because it's also an impasse, these negotiations between, you know, basically 96% of the Democratic caucus and Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema are really exhausting.
It's really exhausting. I you know, I said I don't have the stomach for it. I don't know how you the people who are in the thick of it and you are. But Bernie and AOC, I don't know how they do it. I have ulcers.
I don't know either. And we're lucky that they're there because, you know, we know it. We see what one person can do. Nicole, I know you know the story. I told the story. I opened it up with why does Medicare, why can't it negotiate drug prices? And so I told the story of Billy Tozen, you know, one man who came to Washington, D.C. to do one thing, not let Medicare negotiate drug prices so that pharma could rip us off. And he did it. He was elected as a Democrat. He rose all the way up to a whip position or deputy whip, but he was in leadership. Democrats lost power in the 90s. He just flipped parties and he became a Republican, rose up to become leadership in the Republican Party, all in service of pharma, his Wow. whole career. And then he did it and he got what's called the non-interference clause inserted into Medicare Part D. He then retired and he took a job at pharma for $2 million a year.
Of course
I mean, it's just
did.
The most straightforward corruption you can get.
So is that is it his footsteps that Kyrsten Sinema wants to follow in?
Yeah, I think so. Now it's tea leaves, as you know, right? Because Sinema gets a lot of bang for her buck out of being a cipher, right? So like no one really knows what she wants. It's all very confusing because up until literally Jeff Stein's tweet a couple hours ago, I said that she wanted to make her bones on ultra rich, on the billionaires, mm-hmm. right? Protecting the billionaires from paying their fair share in taxes. Because she wanted to be part of the Davos set, but it just came out that she's actually saying she's making her bones on the corporate tax rate, and the billionaires tax is full speed ahead on 700 American billionaires. So it's all very confusing.
Let me read that tweet that you just referred to, because I saw it as well, and it's interesting. He wrote, this is Jeff Stein of the Washington Post, I think you're referring to, right? He said, don't think it's really punched through yet that Sinema's opposition to higher corporate tax rates appears to, and then in parentheses, possibly with a question mark, be leading Dems to a new mega tax on billionaires that progressives could have only dreamed of. Ooh. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's intriguing.
A previous one, he said wild stuff, which I can really read in Jeff's voice. And it's just hard to follow all of the feints and parries, because I know you know this, but like a bunch of what politicians like Sinema and Manchin do is they throw out a bunch of chaff, like when fighter jets are flying and someone launches a missile at them and then they let out all of the foil so that the missile goes, the wrong way. They don't want everyone to know exactly what it is that they're making their bones on. So you have to like decipher it. But it's pretty easy with Joe Manchin. He's a coal baron. He literally is a coal baron. So you're mm-hmm. like, that's what he wants to continue to burn the world. He's going to gut the climate provisions because he's yep. a coal baron. Kyrsten Sinema has been a bit of a cipher, and like, it seemed like it was ultra rich taxes. Then she threw out that maybe it's pharma and she's gotten really close to bio. I continue to, because she's never, Nicole, never been involved in the pharma fight.
And now she's taking a lot of money from them and sucking up to them and single-handedly, I think, saying you can't negotiate with Medicare for drug yeah. prices.
I still, like, I'm hoping, you know, it's hard. But I'm hoping that that's actually just her. That's just a distraction because she still is trying to make her bones on taxes. And so what they usually do, they don't want to come out as a full heel. So like if she wins and the people lose on corporate taxes, that would be the whole headline. But if she does that and allows Medicare to negotiate, then it'll be written up as she allowed Medicare to negotiate, right? Not that she held the whole thing hostage.
Right.
And so it's all there's so much theater and managing of one's image. And also, like, throughout it all, remembering that it's always Veep. It's always Veep. It's never House of Cards, right? So the biggest danger of all things DC is like a really intricate plan that they just fumble, right? They just don't stick the landing and it all falls apart.
Oh, God.
The good news there, though, is that, and, you know, I'm actually pretty hopeful. It does seem like we're getting decently close.
I hope.
If there's a failed vote, you know, Nancy Pelosi doesn't bring things to the floor to fail.
Right.
But if there is a failed vote, you know what happens right after a failed vote? Another vote. So like it's not like an election. It's not like one and done. Right. So if something goes wrong, there's a huge controversy, firestorm of media, and then you get another go at it.
Well, like the Voting Rights Act the other day, and people are going, why was it 49 to 51? Because Chuck Schumer, at the very end, switched his vote so he can bring it back.
Yes.
He will.
Oh, man, if you want the thing that you get yelled at more in D.C. Is actually defending the leader.
Switching the vote at the last minute.
Yeah, so like when Harry Reid used to be on the wrong side of things and people would be like, he's the worst. And you're like,
it's a procedural thing. He's got to do it.
And it's really hard. And then, you know, when you do convince people, they're like, this is so dumb. And you're like, agreed, agreed.
But everything about the Senate is dumb. Everything about the Senate is dumb.
Yeah. Openly call for the abolition of the Senate. It should have been, right? I mean, like, we literally were like, oh, let's do the thing like the House of Lords over there. And in England, they had the good sense to be like, the House of Lords is dumb. Let's take all of its power away.
Right.
And in America, we're like, let's give all the power to the House of Lords, which is super anti-majoritarian. I mean, we all know that it's already by nature because there's only two per state and the populations of the state are massively different. So it's already hugely anti-majoritarian.
That's
and then
right.
you make it a 60 vote threshold. And you're like, this doesn't work. This is
not democracy. Ooh,
jinx.
You owe me a soda. I learned the you owe me a soda thing from my kid. Great minds think alike and all that. But it's true. It's ridiculous. The fact that California has the same representation in the Senate as South Dakota or the other way around. It's asinine. Yeah. And it shouldn't be that way. And it's supposed to be majority rule if it's democracy. So, we've got a lot of problems.
We've got more people in Washington, D.C. than there are who live in Wyoming. And we've got zero senators and they've got two.
That's right. That's fucked up, too. It's just all wrong. So we need to change it. But it seems like we on the progressive side, certainly, I mean, Democrats, but even more than just Democrats, progressives, we're always playing defense. We always and the Republicans are always on offense. Why does it seems like we're always just protecting or trying to protect our territory and they keep pushing on. When I see the stuff they do and how vocal they are, I know there are more of us than there are of them. They make more noise. And it's astounding. I mean, every time I see, I pull up like a Joe Biden video on YouTube, the comments are all the Trumpers. They're all the idiot guy who was calling me for days. They're just rude and nasty and they want to fight. It's like, you know, we watched on HBO last night, the 4 hours, the thing, if anybody hasn't seen it, watch it. And better yet, get a Republican to sit down and watch it. Because every time I see video from January 6th, my stomach goes in knots.
Wait, I don't know what you're talking
about. Okay, HBO has a new special. It's called 4 Hours in Washington or something.
Oh,
and
I'm definitely going to watch that. It's
really
January
well
6th?
Done. Yes. And it's very well done. And it talks to people who were part of the insurrection. you get in their minds, and it's frightening, but it's so well done. And the thing is, you know what? Everybody in Congress should be made to watch that, because those people that were there that are now denying reality, it goes back to my theory of opposite world, that nothing makes sense anymore. So here we are. I thought today was supposed to be a deadline of sorts.
They're all deadlines. But yeah, I can tell you, it's always hard. I hear you swear and I'm like, I know I can swear, but it's in my brain. It's like,
I know
don't
you don't
swear.
Do it on the radio. Believe me, 40 years in radio. It's just, and I only cursed over the air once. You want to hear the story? I was on KLOS in Los Angeles.
I do want to hear
And David St. Hubbins called in. I produced the Mark and Brian show at the time. They were on vacation, so I was hosting a best of. And because I was running mostly stuff on tape, I didn't have the delay on. But David St. Hubbins of Spinal Tap called in, Michael McKeon, called in on the hotline to promote something that they were doing. And I thought, I can put him on the air. So I put him on. And this was just when Howard Stern came into L.A. We were number one. He was going after us with everything he had to try to attack us, to unseat us from number one. We never talked about him. Honestly, we didn't listen to him. We didn't talk about him. We just ignored that he was there. And they, at the time, had a TV show on NBC called The Adventures of Mark and Brian. It was just one season. And so Michael McKeon, we do the thing. He's in character as David St. Hubbins. He's hysterical, talking about this charity event. And then he goes, hey, I have an idea for an adventure for Mark and Brian. I said, oh, cool. What is it? He said, they should go on the Howard Stern show. And I just went, okay. All right. Well, David St. Hubbins, great talking to you. Thank you so much for calling. We'll be right back. 95.5 KLOS. Hit the commercial and I took off my headphones. I went, shit. And then a switchboarder, we had a room full of people who answered the phones because we were that popular. Switchboarder comes in, your mic is on. It's like the only time I ever cursed. And so,
oh, that's just a mistake. I think they wouldn't even notice that.
My general manager, who knew me so well, said at least you didn't say fuck.
Yeah, I had a guest on who I love dearly, Rock Newman, and he's in Florida now, so maybe, I don't know if he's a fan. It wouldn't surprise me, though. I don't know if you know him, he's a former boxing promoter. Uh-huh. He was Riddick Bowe's manager. He's just an amazing guy. He's like sort of Mr. DC. And I was guest hosting Tom Hartman's show. Rock had a show at We Act Radio. So I'm like, come in and let's talk about it. And he comes in, he sits down. Tom's on the radio all over,
yes.
Right?
Yep. So, oh, yeah. So you don't curse there.
I even said, I was like, all right, Rock, don't swear. And literally the first sentence he said, he's like, well, what's this bullshit? And I was like,
no, don't do that.
No. And then they had to use the button, and luckily
they have a 7-second delay and then it catches up. Yeah, but I don't have a delay. But that's the nice thing about being on the internet, plus the fact that I don't work for anybody but myself, so I can say whatever I want. It's all on me. It's my opinion, my show, my opinion, my finger on the button. When an asshole calls in, I can get rid of them. So anyway,
dump. So here's what I was going to say. Yes. There's a lot of bullshit in DC. Like, it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard to figure out what's going on. But my best guess of what's going on from multiple sources, including the journalists who are following this really closely, is that we are actually extremely close to a deal.
That's what they're saying.
And the deal, and that's not bullshit. That is actually, most of the contours are done. I will say, like, in the negotiations on the policy level, it's been remarkably consistent. So there's all this stuff in the media, like all these things are happening. But if you talk to the, like what we do with policy, the people who actually write the stuff, it's been no changes. The latest one is the billionaire tax. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, write that.
Yeah, I like that one. But let me ask you this, Alex, because one of the ideas that were floated that I really liked was, okay, they don't want $3.5 trillion over 10 years. Well, let's cut it in half. Cut the amount in half and cut the time frame in half. So make it 5 years, $1.75 trillion, do the same exact stuff, but for a shorter amount of time. And then you tell everybody you're taking all that stuff away from them. But that's not what they're doing.
No, that is what they're going to end up doing in a huge portion of the programs.
Really?
I was just speaking about this on my show with Dr. Sanjeev Shriram. It's actually a new idea that's become quite accepted in DC amongst Democrats, and I think amongst progressives, because although there's a gamble to it, there's a risk to it, doing it in a shorter time versus having permanent authorization. The truth is, last time we did stuff in Washington, D.C., I was here. I was working on it. I was young. It was 12 years ago, you know?
Yeah, I remember.
Like, you only
I knew you
get
12 years ago. Right.
One chance every decade or
right.
so.
Exactly.
So you got to do as much as possible. And even if that means it's not permanent, you're like, all right, here's another thing in I don't want to say in game theory, but it is in like political game theory, that since the media always blame the Democrats, right? They always are like, oh, they can't get the votes to make community college happen, for example.
Right.
They never say if any two Republicans just voted for this thing, and they let Republicans attack Democrats for not being able to get things done because the Republicans are stopping it. And the only time that narrative reverses is actually during reauthorization fights.
Wow.
So if the Republican, right, think about the military reauthorization every single year.
Mm-hmm. And now they gave them $10 billion more than they asked for, which, yeah. by the way, for a one-year period is double the full $3.5 trillion, which would be, what, $350 billion. They're getting $740 billion for 1 year, and nobody's yeah. saying, how are you going to pay for that? What are you going to cut to pay for that?
I think you got to say it. They're getting $7.5 trillion every year, like clockwork, reauthorized, because the media will just hammer people for voting against reauthorizing things.
It's incredible.
So like the corporate media are never going to help, but it's harder for them to frame it as a Democrat failing if Republicans are all voting to take seniors' teeth away.
That's
right.
Right.
Like it'll be
right.
it'll be harder for them to be like, this is the Democrats doing it, because the Democrats will all vote to reauthorize it.
Sure.
And that is new. And I think it is actually very sophisticated. And again, it is a gamble, but I actually like the odds on it. And, you know, politics and policy, you can't adhere to old rules. Old rules said do fewer things better. But
right.
old rules didn't take into account. Like when I got my master's in policy, that's like one of the main things, do fewer things better.
Huh.
But that doesn't actually take into account the filibuster.
Right.
Right. Like all of the stuff we're talking about would be gotten rid of, all these stupid things, if we just got rid of the filibuster.
And
a majority.
Did you hear Joe Biden at the thing last night about the filibuster? For those who didn't, let me just play this, because this, I thought, was the most newsworthy moment of the whole town hall thing on CNN.
I also think we're going to have to move to the point where we fundamentally alter the filibuster.
Are you saying once you get this current agenda passed on spending and social programs, that you would be open to fundamentally altering the filibuster or doing away with it?
Well, that remains to be seen exactly what that means in terms of fundamentally altering it, whether or not we just end the filibuster straight up.
Voting rights is equally as consequential.
When it comes to voting rights, just so I'm clear, though, you would entertain the notion of doing away with the filibuster on that one issue. Is that correct?
And maybe more.
Ooh, and maybe more. That's a 180 for him, isn't it?
Yeah, I think he would say, like, no, I've always been there. But it went from, right, that's what politicians
yes,
do.
Yes, that is.
Like, I used to speak gobbledygook that meant nothing, and now I'm clearly saying something. So actually, I've always been there. But it is absolutely new. And I know you know this, and your listeners know this, but maybe some people don't know this. You know, Chuck Schumer can actually fundamentally change the filibuster right now. It's not a legislative thing. It's a rules thing. Right.
Right. Right.
So you can get rid of it with 50 votes, but Chuck Schumer could actually change it to what's colloquially known as the talking filibuster with no other
yes.
thing. He just has to write a note and bring it up to the front of the desk. One of the biggest defenders of the filibuster, who's written a book on it, and he's actually on the left, but he thinks like the filibuster is actually a really great thing. It's just being abused. And he always says, he's like, you don't need to get rid of the filibuster. You just need to make it work by not allowing it to be used to break the Senate.
Right. Who is this? Who?
Let me find his book and I'll send it to you.
But you know, here's the thing. Norm Ornstein, who's been on the show talking about it, who has been a big proponent of the talking filibuster, said right now the onus is on the party in the majority. Put it on the minority. They need to get 41 votes to keep the filibuster going. Put it on them and make them keep talking. The fact that they can just say, oh, we're going to filibuster and then take off for the weekend, it doesn't work that way. It shouldn't work that way.
They just put a note in there. So Rich Ehrenberg's book is called Defending the Filibuster, The Soul of the Senate.
Oh, my God.
I disagree with him. I'm like, get rid of the filibuster and don't stop till you get rid of the Senate. But this man is more educated on the filibuster than I think anyone you could imagine. And so he's like, what Chuck Schumer, what leader Schumer can do is what we all want. He can actually just make it, you know, almost impossible to do it. Like, you have to have an incredible fortitude to keep the talking filibuster going. It can't just be like file a piece of paper and nothing happens.
Right. Because it's nonsense. And of course, we all know the filibuster was just a construct. It's not in the Constitution. The fact and that Sinema and Manchin say, well, it protects the, you know, bipartisanship. No, it works against bipartisanship.
Absolutely. If it was majority rule, we would see Democrats and Republicans voting together on things. Yes. But when it's this all or nothing, winner take all filibuster politics, like, it's just that Mitch McConnell came up with his game plan under Obama and he's still executing it. Do nothing. That's their game.
Right. And when people say, well, you know, when the Republicans get back in control, they'll get rid of the filibuster. Yes, but only if they have like legislation they want to pass. They don't pass anything. They don't do anything. They just prevent us from doing good things.
Also, they just get rid of the filibuster when they need to.
When they need to, like with the Supreme Court.
Yeah, whenever, that's what they do. You're like, yes, the Republicans will do whatever it takes to pass their agenda, because when they get power, they use it. Does it go against rules and norms and things? They're like,
what's
we
a
don't
norm?
Care.
What's a rule? What's a norm? You know, they're behind the orange guy. There is no such thing as a norm there.
And then they also, like, people are always shocked when Democrats come back in power and they're like, there's no way that they'll have the shit, you know, the shamelessness. And you're like, have you ever met them? They don't know shame. They will immediately pivot to attack and be like, the thing that we just did that you're now trying to do is the gravest betrayal of the American Republic. And the media will buy it and just amplify it.
It's just beyond. We could go back and forth like this all the time. But the bottom line is, you should be following Alex Lawson on Twitter and Facebook. On Twitter, he's ALaw202. On Facebook, it's Alex Lawson. And my husband handed me a note. Seriously, he came in here and said, please don't forget to ask Alex why he's wasting time on the air when he should be posting memes. It is Friday.
Oh, it's so good that Memes Day follows me to your show even.
Husband is just, he's the biggest fan of yours. He loves your Memes Day. So, yes. So
I won't let him down. I won't let him down.
I will tell him. Well, he's hearing you. So, David, you heard that, okay? Leave me alone now. So, it's good that you can do that. See, I'm always talking about the importance of having a release, because we get in this pressure cooker, in the stress moment. And if you don't have something that you enjoy doing, something that makes you laugh, something that gives you pleasure, then we're all going to go nuts. You need something. So you do your memes. I'm going to go see my first live concert in over 2 years tomorrow.
That's what I do too. I mean, self-care is the most radical act you can take. You got to take care of yourself. You can't help anybody if you're not taking care of yourself.
No kidding.
And that live music, I'm telling you that, like, it's crucial. It's so good for our soul.
And I'm seeing Todd Rundgren.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. It's what you need. And I'm very, very happy that you're doing that. And I couldn't agree more. In the pressure cooker, activists and advocates, we have to avoid the big sad. We have to recognize, like, we're doing our part, but it's not a sprint. It's not even a marathon. It's a relay race. So you do your part. And when you get tired, you can pass the baton to someone else and they take over. I know that's not how a relay race actually works, but in my metaphor, that's how this relay race, which is called the struggle, and it is always, and we have to fight it that way. So take care of yourself, and then we can do our work.
Right. And so we'll go to the concert at the stupidly renamed Fillmore. It's the Jackie Gleason Theater, damn it, in Miami Beach, and they rename it the Fillmore. There's no Fillmore history in South Florida. So the Fillmore is San Francisco and New York, but they're calling the Jackie Gleason Theater. There's history right there.
Why would you rename something from the Jackie Gleason Theater?
He did his show at that theater. It's this beautiful Art Deco theater. And they try to turn it into 60s psychedelic or something. It's stupid, but it's Florida. That's, you know, it's just typical.
Although in that one, I think that's Live Nation, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. So it's even worse than Florida. It's corporate Nation, America, Florida. Duh.
Right. Exactly. But we will be wearing our N95 masks and being really careful. So, yeah, but it's important to do those things. So any idea, Alex Lawson, when you think this will happen? You know, Joe Manchin said, well, it's not going to be today. May not be next week. But it looks like they're getting close. Maybe next week.
Yeah. So October 31st is actually another funding deadline. So the surface and transportation needs a reauthorization on the 31st. And so that's technically a good deadline to go. And if you work backwards from there, you'd be talking about next week. So this weekend, they come up with the framework. Next week, they fill in the policies, and then the Senate votes on it, and then the House votes on it, and then Biden signs it into law. Once the deal is set, it can move decently quickly. There is one thing in there that could throw. So there's the Votorama on the Senate side.
Right. Because that's what happens anytime a bill goes through reconciliation. They do Votorama, where the other side gets to introduce whatever amendments they want to introduce.
And they could try to do, you know, they could try to introduce a million amendments and just try to kill senators by actually making them stay awake for forever.
That's right. All night.
That's what Votorama is. I mean, it's like, it's the worst. So there is that. But if the deal is cut and Manchin and Sinema say, yes, I'll vote for something, it could move quite quickly and we could see it by the end of the month. As a betting person, I would say like DC blows through deadlines. Like that's their favorite thing. They like that more than children like candy. My kids, I actually think of this toddler mentality when I watch them do this. It's like they can't not do this. So the biggest deadline is when they want to go home. And that is actually useful. But I would bet mid-November is actually when it could happen. That would be my line.
Oh, God. Hopefully it's before then. Hopefully it's before then, because my stomach can't take this. Alex Lawson, again, find him at socialsecurityworks.org on the Twitters, on the Facebook. You've got some meme producing to do. So I hope you'll come back when, you know, when this thing gets a little more concrete and we can go through what's in it.
Always.
Okay.
Can't wait.
Sounds great. Thank you so much, Alex Lawson. You're the best. Hi, Nicole. Always appreciate it. And we'll talk to you soon. Have a great weekend. Okay.
Bye.
There's Alex, everybody. Okay. Now, we are waiting. I do have another guest coming on. Whoops, let me fix the... somebody called it visual feedback. When the guest leaves the Zoom, but if I'm not fast enough to change the graphic, you see the echo effect in the Zoom. So anyway, that's done. But our guest, I'm really surprised that I haven't seen our guest in the Zoom room yet, because the publicist for the publisher actually checked in with me and reconfirmed everything. So I just shot her an email saying, but let me tell you who it is, because I know we've got more than a few gardeners in the chat room. Like, I know Environmental Coffee House is in there. That's Sandy. And Sandy has the most amazing vegetable garden outside of her home. Well, this is the book. It's called The Plant Hunter, A Scientist's Quest for Nature's Next Medicines. And the woman, the author, Cassandra Leah Quave, I think, is a doctor. She is a doctor. She's a dermatologist, I believe, assistant professor of dermatology at and human health at Emory University. So she's in Atlanta. But she's also the herbarium curator. And she's a fellow of the Explorers Club, a former president of the Society for Economic Botany, and a recipient of the Emory Williams Distinguished Undergraduate, blah, blah, blah. She's the co-creator and host of Foodie Pharmacology, a podcast dedicated to exploring the links between food and medicine. And that's what she does. She goes hunting for plants that can be used as medicine. And right now, I mean, at the beginning of the book, it talks about our over-dependence and overuse of antibiotics that, you know, because of that, we have a lot of antibiotic-resistant strains of infections going around. And the way to go forward will likely be, you know, in this field. And we already know what medical marijuana does. And so, look, that's just one plant. So it is interesting. I hope she shows up. I don't know where she is. And this is the same Zoom invite that I sent Alex. So it worked for him. It should work for her. I don't know where they are. All right. So in the meantime, I guess we can talk about other things. There are other things going on. I should have saved the story of our stalker. But let's see. Let me, I don't know if you watched the town hall last night. I saw some of it. My kid came over, so we were hanging with my daughter. Some things are more important than others. And frankly, hanging out with my kid is more important than, than watching a Joe Biden town hall. But I did. I went back. I watched some of it last night. I watched some this morning. I pulled some clips. And one thing I noticed is that Joe Biden had no problem directly name-checking Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin. I didn't pull any of the clips about Manchin, but here's what he said about Sinema.
We've talked a lot about Senator Manchin and Senator Sinema. You seem relatively confident you can kind of get Senator Manchin on board. There's a lot of Democrats in the House and Senate who are confused about where Senator Sinema actually stands on things. And I know she's been negotiating directly with you and the White House. What is your read on her? And obviously, you need her to remain positive in your direction, so I don't know what you're going to say. But what is your read on her? Do you know where she stands?
First of all, she's smart as the devil, number one.
Well, the devil?
Number two.
The devil smart, or is it?
She's very supportive of the environmental agenda in my legislation.
Okay.
Very supportive. She's supportive of almost all the things I mentioned relating to everything from family care to all those issues. Where she's not supportive is she says she will not raise a single penny in taxes on the corporate side and or on wealthy people, period. And so that's where it sort of breaks down. There's a few other issues it breaks down on. But what we're trying to do is reach a point here where I'm able to present to the Senate, they're able to vote on, and the House, a serious, serious piece of legislation that changes the dynamic for working class folks in America and middle class folks, and begins to have the very wealthy and corporate members just begin to pay their fair share. Yeah. Not a lot. How we get there, we're down to four or five issues, which I'm not going to negotiate on national television.
No.
As you might guess.
We'd be interested in hearing them if you want.
No, I know. But all kidding aside, think we can get there.
I think we can get there. Okay, so that's Joe Biden last night. What I heard, he seemed pretty sharp. He was good. If you listen to the crazies on the right, he's this doddering, senile old coot. Well, no, that's the former guy. That's exactly who he is. Did you see what he did today? Look, I'm no fan of Meghan McCain's, but Trump, you got to wonder about this person. He released one of his statements about Meghan McCain going off on her like she's a bully and she's didn't someone ever say you don't punch down? Really? I mean, not that I think Donald Trump is above anyone, but I just don't get it. And what I don't get, again, I'm watching that special from HBO last night and seeing these insurrectionists again and carrying those flags with, you know, with Trump on them. This is how dictatorships start. You know, it's the idol worship of the crazy leader, dear leader. That's what frightens me, the blind devotion to a con man. He's no better than a con man, and he's an idiot. He's just a fucking moron. So it drives me nuts. But that said, he's got an army of millions of people who are as unhinged as he is doing his bidding. And what they're doing, the scariest thing of all, is what they're doing to our election system. So this is a promo for Monday's show. On Monday, Jenny Cohn is going to be here, Jennifer Cohn, and she deals in this arena with elections. And we can go into what's happening. But I want to show you, I came across a promo for a show that Vice TV, I don't know if it already aired. I know this promo was from like last week, but it's so powerful that I want to play it for you because it shows you the issues and what we're dealing with now. So this is the promo. Again, it's a Vice TV show, and I think they have their shows on HBO, but I'm not sure. Anyway, this is about the threats to election officials.
Time's running out, Richard. We're coming after you and every motherfucker that stole this election with our Second Amendment. You will be served lead.
And the statement that pierced me was when he said, if a vehicle were to pull up, at least this would soften the blow.
What?
And when he said that, that was when I thought, this is real. This is real.
This is real.
Not long after the former president tweeted at me, I received the first specific threat. You lied. You're a traitor. Perhaps cuts and bullets will soon arrive. Rhino stole election. We steal lives. Q.
Oh, my God. So there's that. And that should scare you. So we'll get into that on Monday. I got to tell you, I'm disappointed. I don't know where our guest is. And I thought for sure this one's going to be a no-brainer because the publicist did contact me. And now I guess it's Friday afternoon. The publicist is gone and our guest is nowhere to be seen. So in that case, the phone lines are open, 954-889-6410. If you're on Skype, you can Skype into Nicole Sandler. Anybody can call except for the the guy in San Antonio who's a troll. But, you know, trolls feel, you know what, here's the thing. Trolls I don't want to hear from. If you happen to be a Republican, a real Republican, and want to seriously talk about any of the issues, I'd be happy to talk to you, but you can't throw out the batshit crazy stuff. You can't go all Q on us. So you can do that. And I would love to talk to you. I really want to hear from somebody who doesn't believe that, I guess I could have asked Joe Walsh, doesn't believe that American adults who work a full-time job should have a living wage. Because there are some who don't believe that. They're fine with the minimum wage of $7.25 an hour. But they could never live on $7.25 an hour, right? I want someone to defend that to me. I want someone to defend for me. Oh, all right. Oh, well, I should have pulled that down so it wasn't so loud when they called. Hi, who's this?
Hey, this is Jay out of Baltimore. I'm not Patrick.
No, you're not Patrick. I know his phone number now, and I know that's not.
Yeah, but I just want to say, well, first off, I want to say I love your show.
Oh, thank you.
I love what you do. Keep doing what you do. I love those paintings in the back, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
I didn't know you are very talented.
Thank you. That's so kind of you. And I paint, and they're all for sale. So if you see one you like, those, you know, the ones that are back there now are just ones that I painted because in between commissions, you know, I paint what I want to paint. So there's those. And I do take commissions for pet portraits. So there's my commercial for today.
I'll be paying attention.
Okay.
But I just have to say, you know, I agree with what you've been saying for a long, what you just said earlier about the Republicans, their only job Their only job is to destroy the Democrats. It's not about ideas. I have not heard any Republican tell anyone on television or any other place what their platform is.
They don't have one. Do you know, for the 2020 presidential election, they did not even put out a new platform. They just said, we're going to use our 2016 platform. Part of the 2016 platform is we're going to defeat the current president, who, it just made no sense. But they're not doing any work. They don't want to do any work.
Yeah. And I agree with what Driftglass from the Professional Left says. They these people are programmable meatbags. They just are. I mean, I hate to be mean to people, but let's just be honest about what's going on in this country. To have 74 million people vote for this racist piece of trash,
right?
And we're supposed to all just suffer because of that? What is that all about?
I have no idea. And the thing is that he lies and they swear to it, right? So
yes.
This was the largest, biggest, I think, victory in terms of the popular vote. By 7 or 8 million votes separated Joe Biden and Donald Trump. Yet Donald Trump just looks straight at the camera and says, we won. You know we won. It was a blowout. And they stole it from us. And his people believe it and they parrot it back. And that's what's so frustrating, because you really can't argue with a madman, right? Because it takes you down to their level. So we're sitting here. Just, it's what I call opposite world. That's why I'm always talking about opposite world. It's hard.
Every time I hear somebody say something stupid, I keep thinking about what you're saying. This is opposite world. And my final point is, when it's all said and done, you know, well, at least to me, and maybe I'm being hyperbolic. I don't know. I don't really give a damn. But I hear people say we almost lost our democracy on January 6th. I think it's been lost for quite some time.
Oh, yeah.
I'm tired of people in the media saying, and the media is not doing their job at all. The Beltway media is a joke. These
horrible
people are making 6 or 7 figure salaries, and they just don't want their taxes cut. Let's just be honest. But the bottom line is, our democracy is failing for a long time. The Reagan nonsense was a failure. It was a lie. And when it's all said and done, we're not winning. So when you sit around like Newt Gingrich and tell people how exceptional we are, the thing about being exceptional is you have to keep it up, meaning that you have to maintain, you have to take care of what you have, so you can keep saying what you're saying, but actually doing it.
That's right.
But that's all I have to say, Nicole.
Jay,
I love what you do.
Oh, thank you.
Keep doing it. You have my support. Curse all you want. I love it. Let's go.
You got it. Thank you so much, Jay. It was so nice to talk to you. I hope you call back.
I will, dear.
All
take
right.
care.
You take care. Bye. You know, he said something that's really important. These people who make all this money, they just don't want to pay taxes. I let me tell you a story. He'll probably get mad at me for doing it, but what the hell. When I first met David, he was very well off. He did very well. He was a sports agent. He represented professional baseball players. But he always had he worked for himself. He didn't work for a big agency. He had his own stable of clients. And when we first met, he had rebuilt his, was trying to rebuild his business after his divorce. And he basically backed off the terms of his divorce, said, you know, he really couldn't sign any new clients for 5 years or she'd get half of it or whatever. So he didn't. He had one really big client, Carlos Delgado, who was playing for the Mets. And he had a bunch of young guys who had been drafted out of high school that David negotiated the draft deal. And the way the sports agency works, it's the only business that I know of that's worse than radio right now. I'm going to oversimplify it here. But basically, if you represent a kid out of high school who gets drafted by a professional baseball team, you'll get paid on their draft deal. But then you don't earn another dime from that client unless and until they not only get into the majors, but they get past the first 3 years where they get to negotiate, they go to arbitration or they become a free agent, where the agent gets to negotiate a deal above and beyond the scale. So these agents take care of these kids, in some cases, for 7 years. And not only do they not get any money, make any money from that player, they have to... They're responsible for buying these players' equipment. So it costs you money to represent a kid, to represent a player. So the business changed, just like everything has changed over the last couple of decades. So when I first met David, he was very well off. he did really well. And when it came time to do his taxes, he's like, I want to pay my taxes. I think it's my responsibility. I do well. I can afford to pay these taxes because we get so much back in return. That's one of the things that made me fall in love with him, because he didn't get bitch about, oh my God, my tax rate's going up. He's good. If I do better, then I can give more money back. And it's my responsibility. He didn't bitch and moan one iota about paying his taxes. There are too few people like that. Because right now, I mean, I can look at the people on MSNBC. I just saw, you know, Rachel Maddow is reportedly, she signed this new deal, but the new deal will have her not doing a nightly show. So they're going to have to find someone else to anchor the 9 o'clock hour. She's going to do special projects or whatever. And for that, she's going to get, I don't know, $20 million a year or something insane like that. Well, they're grooming Nicole Wallace, who, frankly, I don't see her very often because she's on as I'm getting ready for to go on the air. But the few times I've seen her, she's okay. But I can't help but remember that Nicole Wallace was the communications director for W, which I have a problem with. And then she went on to run John McCain's campaign with Steve Schmidt. What were they famous for? Sarah Palin. They foisted Sarah Palin on us. And I'm sorry, I just don't forget that. I'm a Scorpio. I don't forget. I may forgive, kinda, but I don't forget. And so, you know, I look at Steve Schmidt. I can't, and he's saying really sensible things right now, but I don't want to hear it because it's Steve Schmidt. But I'm trying, right? But Nicole Wallace has been floated as the replacement for Rachel Maddow at 9 o'clock. And then I read a quote that she doesn't want it because she's going through a divorce. Okay, she's got young kids, and here's the money part, the money shot. She's already making $2 million a year. She doesn't need any more, and she doesn't want to do it. On one hand, I say good for her. She's putting her kids and her family first, as she should. But, you know, when you're talking about money in those amounts, she's making $2 million a year. Rachel's going to make, what, $20 million a year. How much money does one person need? And when do you start say, you know, I don't want to give back anymore? It's selfishness. And these mega millionaires, you know, the Sackler family and the Kochs and the, you know, I'll even put it to George Soros. At least he gives back. But their whole thing is keeping their taxes as low as possible. You have Jeffrey Bezos, who didn't pay a dime in taxes. Now, I don't know about his personal income tax returns, but I'm sure, because the more money you have, the more you can pay the accountants to find the loopholes. And speaking of that, this giant tax giveaway that the last administration did, the former guy, when they did that, that's $2 trillion tax breaks for the richest among us after during the campaign, he said over and over again, I'm going to tax the billionaires. My friends won't talk to me anymore because they know I'm going to. He lied. Why do these people follow him when all he does is lie? They're just suckers. Who was it? Ringling or Barnum or Bailey? There's a sucker born every minute. Yeah, and they're all Americans and they're all Republicans. But that aside, it's just, can you tell I'm frustrated? I need a weekend, so I'm glad there's a weekend here. Once again, I'll say, Durbin says, I trust Nicole Wallace about as far as I can trust any Republican with a track record working for extreme Republicans like Cheney, Bush, and nuts like Palin. Right. But all these good Democrats who watch MSNBC all day have fully embraced her. See, you might remember I was sounding the alarm that MSNBC had become the station for the never Trumpers. It's all well and good that they were, you know, standing up against the orange, evil, failed former twice impeached president. But remember, at heart, they're Republicans. They don't want you and I to have a better life. They don't want, for instance, my kid to be able to go to community college tuition free. And it's a shame, because if she had that, she'd probably go to college. As it is, she didn't. Because I didn't want her to take out a student loan, and she didn't want to go to school. She had enough of school in high school. Not a good student. Smart kid, not a good student. But the opportunities are just not there. And those people at the top of the, you know, financial ladder, I guess, don't want them to be there. Childcare, so people can go back to work. Why don't they want that? You got to wonder. Well, these are also the same people that are rewriting the history books, especially in Texas. Oh, that's where our friend Patrick is from. What they're doing, there's that podcast, Southland, but the stuff they're talking about, thankfully, the story that we went over either earlier this week or last week, when about the school district curriculum person who was saying you always have to present an opposing side, and then talked about a book about the Holocaust and said, so when you teach this, you have to teach the opposing side. Thankfully, officials above her in the pecking order said, no, there are not two sides to the Holocaust. But the fact that this woman who runs the curriculum for a major school district in Texas didn't know that, that's troubling. Joy, I just saw out of the corner of my eye, Joy said, but Nicole, people change. That is true. And I don't believe Nicole Wallace, or even Steve Schmidt for that matter, will ever vote for a Republican again. But I don't know that they're going to vote for a Democrat either. Maybe they will. There are some, like, who is it? Is it Max Boot, who writes for the New York Times, who said, he wrote that op-ed a couple of weeks ago, and he's, or maybe it was the Washington Post, and he said, I'm certainly not a Democrat, but I am a one-issue voter, and I will only be voting for Democrats until the Republicans return to sanity. The Republican Party is anything but sane. And that's what's so frightening. I'm not a history buff. If I were, I probably would stay away from anything dealing with the rise of authoritarians, the rise of fascism, because that is so where we're headed. This opposite world that I'm always talking about is not as funny as the little Twilight Zone thing that Boca voiced for us. It's people worshiping a con man, a liar, somebody who wouldn't give any of those people a dime if they were destitute and dying on the street and needed a dime to get a sip of water. Donald Trump would spit on them, but they think he's the Messiah. Now, again, you know I'm not a religious person. I don't know anything about the Bible or any of that stuff. I've never had religion in my life. My family's Jewish by heritage and tradition, not even the tradition so much. So I don't have that religion. But I recall during the 8 years of Barack Obama as president, they would constantly talk about him as the Antichrist. And the story was that this very charismatic figure was going to come, and he was the Antichrist, and he was going to bring about the end of the world. And of course, the right-wing religious nuts liked it because they think we're all going to be raptured, or they'll be raptured. And, you know, if I don't go back to Israel, I won't be. Again, it doesn't make sense. But I look at Donald Trump, and I think if there is some such a thing as an Antichrist, that's him. That's him. So I don't know. The whole world has gone insane. And I look up at the phone, and I see it's the other crazy caller. So Pat from Albuquerque, who some of you have heard on the Randy Rhoads Show, and he sends crazy emails to Tom Hartman and Randy and me and Brad Friedman and all that. He's calling now like he thinks I'm going to take his call. Pat, I know where you live, and I know your phone number, and I know your name, Pat Ward. You know, these idiot trolls, get a fucking life. Get a fucking life. All right, I just hung up on him. I'm not going to bring that up. You can tell I need a weekend, and good thing it is a weekend. Although, yes, people can change, but a lot of people don't change. I agree people can change. I have a long memory. I forgive, but I don't forget, to go full circle. With that, have a weekend. Monday, Jennifer Cohen on what's happening with our voting rights. Tuesday, Kathleen Ballew, who wrote A Field Guide to White Supremacy. That should be fun. Wednesday, John Neffinger, who you're going to love hearing from. He's a media specialist. He's really good. And next Thursday, Howie Klein. Friday, Ellie Mastal. So we've got a full week. Next week, I'm going to rest up and re-energize and start all over again next week. And maybe, who knows, maybe we'll even have a deal. All right. You take care of yourselves. Have a great weekend. If you're in Miami Beach, come by the Fillmore at the Jackie Gleason Theater and see Todd Rundgren, see live music, and I'll bring an extra N95 mask for you, okay? All right, with that, I'll wish you a very happy weekend, and thanks for listening, everyone. I don't know what happened to our guest. I guess we'll have to reschedule, or not. I don't know. All right, thanks. Bye. I'll leave you with the news. Have a great weekend, everyone.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
As expected, the House of Representatives voted Thursday to hold longtime Trump ally and aide to the former guy, Steve Bannon, in contempt of Congress for defying a subpoena from the committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol. 9 Republicans joined all of the Democrats for a final 229-202 vote. The referral goes to the Justice Department, where Attorney General Merrick Garland decides what happens next. Meanwhile, the House Judiciary Committee on Thursday questioned the Attorney General for the very first time since he took this position. Republicans grilled him on the Bannon vote and his plans to communicate with the FBI about parents' threats against school officials. Democrats pressed Garland on civil rights matters, including police misconduct and violence in prisons. But it was Congressman Steve Cohen of Tennessee who asked the question. He pointed out that Michael Cohen, the former guy's former fixer and attorney, was convicted for merely doing what Trump, as individual one, ordered him to do, then basically asked why the former guy hadn't yet been indicted. When Garland replied that in order to protect everyone involved, the DOJ doesn't comment on the status of investigations unless there's a public charge, Cohen replied,
I will accept that, but I hope that you will look at it because I believe that he is equally, if not more, guilty. And it does seem that people get favored treatment if he's not prosecuted.
President Joe Biden answered questions Thursday night at a CNN town hall when asked if a deal on the big two-part Build Back Better plan is going to happen. The president was cautiously optimistic.
Are you close to a done deal?
No problems. All done. No, look, Anderson, we've been, I've probably spent well over 100 hours. This is a big deal.
Bottom line, do you think you will get a deal?
I do think I'll get a deal.
Punchbowl News reporting Friday morning that the White House has been pressing the Democratic leadership to move toward a House vote next week on both the reconciliation package and the so-called bipartisan infrastructure bill. Will they get there? It sounds like they're still pretty far apart. And by they, I mean Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema versus the rest of the Democratic Party.
She's very supportive of the environmental agenda in my legislation. Very supportive. She's supportive of almost all the things I mentioned relating to everything from family care to all those issues. Where she's not supportive, she says she will not raise a single penny in taxes on the corporate side and or on wealthy people, period. And so that's where it sort of breaks down. There's a few other issues it breaks down on. But what we're trying to do is reach a point here where I'm able to present to the Senate, they're able to vote on, and the House, a serious, serious piece of legislation that changes the dynamic for working class folks in America and middle-class folks, and begins to have the very wealthy and corporate members just begin to pay their fair share. Yeah. Not a lot. How we get there, we're down to 4 or 5 issues, which I'm not going to negotiate on national television, as you might guess.
We'd be interested in hearing them if you want.
No, I know. But all kidding aside, I think we can get there.
Although Manchin and Sinema are opposed to different parts of the bill, she did join him in opposing expanding Medicare to cover vision, hearing, and dental. Though Biden did say she likes the idea of helping to lower the cost of hearing aids, so we got that going for us. The president spoke plainly and clearly, laying out the facts with little to no self-aggrandizement, admitting some of the disappointments and changes that had to be made in the face of the Manchinima opposition.
Tuition-free community college is out. Biden said the paid leave provision has been trimmed from 12 weeks to 4, although this is something we know House Democrats are working very hard to restore. One place where the president appears to have evolved in his position is regarding the filibuster.
I also think we're going to have to move to the point where we fundamentally alter the filibuster.
Are you saying once you get this current agenda passed on spending and social programs, that you would be open to fundamentally altering the filibuster
or doing away with
it, or doing away with it?
Well, that remains to be seen exactly what that means in terms of fundamentally altering it, whether or not we just end the filibuster straight up. Voting rights is equally as consequential.
When it comes to voting rights, just so I'm clear, though, you would entertain the notion of doing away with the filibuster on that one issue. Is that correct?
And maybe more.
Stay tuned. In COVID news, the CDC on Thursday backed the Food and Drug Administration in authorizing COVID-19 booster shots for millions of Americans who received the Moderna or Johnson & Johnson vaccines. And they're also now allowing mixing and matching those extra doses. Regardless of what type you first received, you can supplement your protection by getting a booster shot from a different manufacturer. Meanwhile, in opposite world, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis on Thursday escalated his fight against the White House and common sense over COVID-19 restrictions. This time, he's calling for a special legislative session so that the state's Republican-led legislature can block President Biden's vaccine mandates. But if COVID doesn't kill us, the climate probably will. In a new climate report released just this week, researchers with the medical journal The Lancet warned that the warming climate, quote, will affect every U.S. region, and said that there is, quote, no safe global temperature rise from a health perspective. The report also noted decades of racially biased policies place Blacks, Latinos, Asians, and Native people, as well as low-income communities, at disproportionately high risk amid the climate crisis. Tragic news from a movie set in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where the actor Alec Baldwin was filming a new movie, Rust. Baldwin fired a prop gun that was supposed to be loaded with blanks. Somehow, that shot killed Helena Hutchins, the cinematographer of the film. Director Joel Souza was also injured. No charges were filed immediately, and authorities are investigating. Sadly, similar tragedies have happened before. In 1993, Brandon Lee, the 28-year-old son of the late martial arts star Bruce Lee, died after being hit by a .44-caliber slug while filming a death scene for the movie The Crow. That gun was supposed to have fired a blank, but an autopsy turned up a bullet lodged near his spine. And in 1984, actor John Eric Hexum died after shooting himself in the head with a prop gun blank while pretending to play Russian roulette with a .44 Magnum on the set of the TV series Cover Up. Just horrible. Finally, in our last What's News report, I told you about the former guy's planned media group with a social media platform to be called, ironically, Truth Social. Well, today we learned that one of the big investors in the new company was not aware of Trump's involvement. Now, Financial Times is reporting that upon learning what Truth Social would be, this investor pulled out immediately, allegedly saying, quote, "The idea that I would help Trump build out a fake news business called Truth makes me want to throw up." And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate.